Can I first of all welcome those at the front here and introduce Steve Goose and Greta Austin from the CMC. Of course, to my right, Don Mackay, who is our ambassador to Geneva and the chair of the conference. And on my left, Alison Kelly, who is the Director of Disarmament and Non-Proliferation from Ireland and the organiser of the very important Dublin conference that will be held on the 19th to the 30th of May. For more than 5 years, the Geneva process has really failed to come to grips with the question of cluster munitions. And the reason that the Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons hasn't been able to succeed was because it works on a consensus basis, and there was no consensus in this area. There are strongly held and diverse views on cluster munitions. I think that the Oslo process, by comparison, has succeeded to an immeasurably greater degree. And while those diverse views and different opinions mean that there will be no absolute unanimity at this conference, I'm very pleased to say that different countries and different organisations have come together, they've worked hard, they've debated hard, and they have worked to narrow the differences between the different countries. I think the most important thing that is emerging out of this conference is that delegates have agreed to go on to Dublin to negotiate and adopt a draft convention. As I left from Parliament this morning, I was told that already 28 countries had signed the Wellington Declaration. By the time I had arrived there, it was up to 46. A third of the countries have signed already. We anticipate that the overwhelming majority of countries will sign up to the declaration, many of them here. Some, of course, have to go back to seek the agreement of their home countries, but they have between now and the 19th of May to do so. One of the key objectives was also to demonstrate the political momentum that exists for a ban on cluster munitions that cause unacceptable harm to civilians. And we have seen that momentum develop. I'm delighted to say that there are 13 new countries that are participating in this conference. And I'm particularly delighted, from New Zealand's point of view, that that includes South Pacific, smaller states that are here in force and participating and eager to see an outcome. 122 governments registered for the Wellington Conference. Some in the end were not able to get here. Others that weren't able even to register, and those that weren't able to get here, have said that notwithstanding their absence, they intend to sign up to the Wellington Declaration and they intend to go on and support the process in Dublin. And I certainly welcome that. I don't believe that we could have achieved at this conference what we have without two things. Firstly, a willingness on the part of different parties and countries to engage. That is critically important. I know that some of those countries that were more cautious about this draft convention have already signed the Wellington Declaration and will be going to Dublin. And secondly, and very importantly, the support of the non-government organisation group, and in particular the Cluster Munition Coalition. I think that the work done, the constructive work done by the CMC and by the other parties represented here, have helped to develop that momentum and to move us to where we are today. Can I acknowledge again the participation here of the survivors? The survivors are a reminder to all of us of why we're here. We're not talking about theory. We're talking about people's lives, and we're talking about preventing damage to people's lives in the future. And I think that their presence, their courage, their participation has helped us again towards the objective that we have. Building on the work that has been done here, we look forward to a binding treaty on cluster munitions, banning cluster munitions which cause unacceptable harm to civilians, being negotiated, being agreed, being signed up to, and then being implemented, arising out of Dublin in just under 2 months' time. With that, if I could pass on to the chair of the conference, Don Mackay, first, and ask you to make any comments, or would you rather simply answer questions on
that? I'm happy to pass to.
Shall I go to my? I was going to say my right, but in political terms, that might not be appropriate. To Steve and Greta to make some comments.
We have to start first by congratulating.
Sorry, would you like to move towards the microphone so everybody can pick you up? The television, by the way, this is not Don Mackay.
We have to start first by congratulating New Zealand for the very important international responsibility that they've taken on and the job that they've done during this week. And most particularly Ambassador Mackay for having stood strong and steered this conference to a result with integrity after a week of heated and intensive discussions. We do have a result that is a historic step forward towards the conclusion of a treaty banning cluster munitions and stopping the humanitarian impact that cluster munitions have been causing until now, and that we know that they would continue to cause in the future unless we do something with this problem. And now the baton will be handed over to Ireland, and the pressure will be on Ireland, and it will be Ireland that we need to continue to stand strong on this issue. But as I said, we are closer than ever to having a treaty that will save lives for decades to come. And there have been issues during this week that have been contentious, where there is not agreement, but we should not focus only on those. We have to focus on the fact that in this room here, actually, there, in essence, is general agreement on banning. In fact, around 95% of those cluster munitions that exist in the stockpiles of the countries that are here. We are talking about, we're still discussing the remainder of those, but there is certainly, among countries here, important producers, users, stockpilers, a very important commitment and willingness to get a result on this. And those states should be commended for the vision that they are showing. The difficult issues during this week have, as we've mentioned, been a transition period that some states are arguing for instead of an immediate ban. It's been the issue of interoperability, which is the issue of states party to the treaty taking part in joint military operations with states that are not party to the treaty and may want to use cluster munitions, how that should be dealt with. And most importantly, perhaps the issue of the definitions, where I think we've made great progress during this week in learning more from each other on both sides on what the facts are and what the remaining issues are. And we know that there are some states, for instance, that want to have an exemption for submunitions, for cluster munitions with submunitions that are equipped with self-destruct mechanisms, because they have argued that this is the solution to the problems that cluster munitions cause. But frankly, in my view, after this week, I think it will be very hard for them to continue to argue that. And indeed, many of those states that have presented those arguments in the past have come to realize that those cluster munitions that are equipped with self-destruct mechanisms are indeed also a part of the problem and not the solution. And the number of countries that continue to argue that are becoming fewer and fewer and more marginalized. And I think I'll stop with that.
Thank you very much, Greta. Do you want to add anything, Steve? And do you want to move towards the microphone?
I think I would save myself for any tricky questions.
Okay.
I would like to reiterate our appreciation for the fantastic leadership that has been provided by New Zealand on this issue. By you, Mr. Minister, the extraordinarily capable diplomatic skills of Ambassador Mackay. And in the big picture, this conference has been a rousing success. It's far exceeded our expectations coming in terms of the level of participation, the in-depth nature of the discussions, and the degree to which we've been able to come together. The humanitarian issues, essentially we've got a consensus on things like stockpile destruction and victim assistance and clearance of contaminated areas. The differences on the most controversial issues are clearly narrowing, with what we consider to be the problematic states moving in the right direction, some in very big ways over the course of this week. We're going to have some tough times in Dublin. In a number of states like Denmark and France and Germany and the UK have already told us today, expect a tough fight in Dublin. But we're confident that we're going to end up at the end of the day with an extraordinarily comprehensive and strong treaty, and that we're going to be able to bridge the gaps that exist now between the overwhelming majority of states here who want as comprehensive a ban as possible and those who are still trying to see if they can't get some wiggle room. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. And I'm going to ask Alison to move over to the centre here. I'll sit just behind you. And with that rousing comment of optimism about Dublin, can I ask you to talk about your perceptions and where you see it going from here?
Thank you very much, Minister. And I would like to reiterate very much what others have said in paying tribute to the magnificent success of the Wellington Conference. It has certainly exceeded all expectations in terms of the outcome and the basis for work in Dublin. I'd also like to pay tribute to the magnificent organisation. I think it's just been a tremendous experience for all of us being here in Wellington this week. We are just sorry we haven't enjoyed more of the great weather. The work this week is a tribute to everybody who has been involved, to the leadership of New Zealand, the tremendous chairing skills of Ambassador Mackay and his team, but also to all other governments who are here, and to the IOs, the international organisations, and particularly to the Cluster Munition Coalition and the other NGO participants. Dublin is the diplomatic conference in Dublin, will be the negotiation stage of the Oslo process, which began exactly 1 year ago this week, these days. And I don't think anybody could have expected the momentum, the political momentum, the engagement of governments that we have now as we move towards the conference, the Dublin conference in May. We have a very solid basis for work in the draft convention which is being passed on to us, and the declaration. 1 year ago, 49 countries subscribed to the declaration on the 23rd of February last year. But within an hour of the plenary this morning, as the Minister has pointed out, we had that many signed up, and the numbers, I'm sure, are now much higher. So we look forward to welcoming everybody to Dublin. We're very confident of being of adopting an ambitious convention there, prohibiting cluster munitions which cause unacceptable humanitarian harm, and also providing a framework for victim support and assistance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alison. So we've now got about 7 minutes for questions, and I think that some of those will be directed to you, Don, if you'd rather to stay through answering towards the question.
Phil, everybody said, you have all said what a great success this conference has been, but I think probably speak to my colleagues in saying that you haven't given us any detail which indicates the extent of that success. Can we have some detail? How many countries have changed their positions? Who are the outstanding countries? How much further have you got to go?
Well, let me just say, generally, you don't usually get that detail until the process is concluded and the process is ongoing. What we have suggested is that the sheer number of people that are signing up already to the Wellington Declaration, it was, if I recall rightly, about 46 as I came through the door, before the conference had even ended, and with the knowledge that many countries will need to take it back home. What the expectation is that I have picked up is that overwhelmingly the countries that have participated here and countries that haven't been able to participate here will sign up to that declaration, will attend in Dublin, and as I think we heard from Steve and Greta, the expectation is that while there are still differences to work through and the debate is hard, sometimes even ferocious, that there is a sense there that people are participating because they know it's important and they're participating in a process that they're keeping in right to the very end. My anticipation from the feedback that I've got is that we will get a declaration, we will get a treaty signed in Dublin, and we will follow the path that the Ottawa Convention set for banning landmines, which has been tremendously successful. Don, would you like to add any more detail to that?
Yeah, thanks, Minister. What one needs to bear in mind is that this is part of a process. It's a process that we've agreed in Wellington will end in Dublin. And that's an important outcome from the Wellington meeting. We weren't sure when we came into this meeting how many countries would actually commit themselves to go to Dublin to conclude a treaty. And colleagues have said, this is not an uncontroversial exercise. There are many different perspectives involved. There are many different countries involved. What we have out of Wellington as a result of the negotiations here is basically all points of view remaining on board and all points of view committing to go to Dublin. So that in itself is actually quite a significant outcome. It's not an outcome that has been achieved without difficulty, but there is a common commitment, despite the different perspectives on different issues have been referred to. There is, I think, a common commitment on the part of colleagues in the conference to do something about this humanitarian problem. The second point, I guess, I would make is that this is the first conference that has actually had a draft convention before it. The previous conferences have had discussion documents. We came to Wellington with a draft convention. We gave a commitment in advance of Wellington that there would be an opportunity for full discussion of that convention and of the issues in it. We've had that. We have narrowed down a number of areas of difference, obviously not all of them. Frankly, I'm sure that Alison, like the rest of us, would be dismayed if we were going into Dublin without any issues, because it would mean, frankly, that there was something wrong with the process. The final issues will be crunched at the final diplomatic conference. But we've got rid of a lot of other issues that were likely, or that had the potential to distract us at that conference in Dublin. And on the difficult issues, I think colleagues, as Greta has said, have a better sense of where the potential options lie. So in terms of concrete outcomes, an agreement to go to Dublin, very well subscribed to by all points of view, not just one point of view, and a very thorough discussion of the issues and a narrowing down of differences. And, you know, despite the different points of view, we're still together.
Mr. McKay, can you have an idea of how many of the 100 governments that have been here are not going to sign up to this, who are strictly opposed to it, and who are they?
No, frankly, at this stage, I don't have a sense of anyone who will not sign up to it. I mean, not everyone will do so here in Wellington, but we've always said that we need to keep the document open for subscription after Wellington, and there are a number of reasons for that. One is that some countries here for constitutional bureaucratic reasons may not be able to sign up here. But there are also some countries that are not able to be here who we know wish to subscribe to the Declaration. And clearly, if they're not here, they can't put it Wellington. So the option will be open to them to do it after Wellington.
So are you saying 100% of the governments that attended are signing up?
No. What we're saying is that no country has, to the best of my knowledge, yet said that it will not sign up.
In terms of the no countries which are opposed, most of them seem to be allies of the United States in some respects. Is that because it's NATO members and Australia and Japan and Turkey and other countries which are strongly associated with the United States? Is it because of the interoperability provisions in particular that those nations are still holding out?
I think it's wrong to say that they're opposed. They're here and they're engaging constructively in the process. They have some concerns that they would like to see dealt with in the convention. And that interoperability, obviously, is one of those concerns. The countries that you mentioned are not the only countries that have concerns about the particular parts of the text. There are other countries that would like to see other changes made to the text. So I think it's wrong to focus on a particular group of countries and say that they're opposed to the process. If they're opposed to the process, they certainly wouldn't be subscribing to the declaration. And I've heard a number of the countries that you refer to so far in the Premier Room committing themselves to go to Dublin and subscribing to the Wellington Declaration. But this is a negotiation. This is not a situation, and there are real issues involved. On the humanitarian side, there are real issues involved for countries. These issues need to be worked through. It's a negotiation. It's not sort of a backroom chat.
What I was wondering was because leading into this, definitions was considered to be one of the main obstacle blocks, and some of the humanitarian commitments were also, there was some lack of clarity on. We now have clarity on the humanitarian. The definitions issue seems to have narrowed considerably. Is the interoperability the main remaining stumble block for a lot of the nations who are not yet fully on
board? I certainly think it's one of the issues. Yeah, the definitions have been narrowed, but we haven't got there yet. We won't get there till Dublin. But no one coming here expected that we would wrap up definitions and issues such as interoperability here. Those are the sort of things that you deal with in the final stages, not in the penultimate stages as we have here.
Stephen indicated in his remarks that there was one country that he was very pleased had changed its view. What country was that?
Okay.
You indicated that there was one country that you were pleased to have changed their view, or who had indicated a different view?
I didn't indicate one country. No, in fact, almost all of the countries who we have identified as being problematic in terms of proposing weakening amendments, such things as exceptions to the prohibition or transition period or very crippling language on interoperability, even all of those countries have been moving in the right direction in this week, both in terms of what they're demanding on those issues and their general commitment to the process.
Which countries are they?
Well, the main proposals that have been put forward that we have had objections to have come from France, the UK, Germany, Japan. Those would be the ones I'd highlight as the ones who put forward the proposals. They've got other countries behind them, like Denmark, but they're the ones who put forward the proposals. But I see their positions moving in the right direction. It's been one of the successes of this week.
But haven't you already said, sir, that France, Germany, and some of the other European countries have already said you're in for a fight with Dublin? I mean, those key players are a major fly in the ointment for you, aren't they?
Look, nobody should be surprised that more than 100 countries coming here include countries that have different points of view. We knew that beforehand. They will go away here still having different points of view. What we have heard is that they will, however, have narrowed the differences. And what we've heard also is that some of those countries that have been named, have already signed up to the declaration to go forward to Dublin. What we've seen here, in 3 days, is more progress than what we've seen in 5 years in Geneva, and that's what we should be celebrating about the Oslo process.
Can you tell us which of those countries have signed up?
France, I think, is one of those that have gone forward. The United Kingdom, actually, I'm told all of them.
Minister
Gough,
Australia was one of the
countries
that came up in the opening press conference. Is their position even more clear now?
I think Australia is working through those issues. They've indicated concerns about some aspects, including interoperability. But they are here, and I'm sure they're intending to go on to Dublin. That means that we're making progress.
Is there a sign of movement in their position, especially in light of the new election?
In any discussion that goes on to become a negotiation, there will be signs of movement, and there will have to be movement for the best result that is possible. But what we're looking forward to is a very strong declaration. The first declaration, as Ambassador Mackay has said, being referred to Dublin as a strong basis for the discussion, the negotiation that will take place there, and the chance that we will then get a treaty arising out of that, not simply a chance, I think a high probability that we will succeed in getting a treaty from the Oslo process that has certainly not emerged from the United Nations Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons. That's what we should be noting about the significance of this process, this conference, and our anticipation for what will happen in Dublin.
In that regard, does this then signal a new era of diplomacy in terms of the Oslo process being a way of achieving things which the United Nations...
I think what it signals is that seven countries that were frustrated at no progress in Geneva have set in place a very successful process based on the Ottawa Convention before it. And speaking for New Zealand, in an era when disarmament has not moved forward, we will work in every channel that we can, one not excluding the other, to get the results that will serve the benefits of humanity, and that's what we're doing here. Can we take some other questions, because we're running out of time, and I'm conscious there's a gentleman down the back that...
Salaam alaikum.
Alaikum salaam.
After
signing this treaty in Dublin,
ماذا عدتم للضحايا وماذا سوف تقدمون لهم؟
What's your plan for the survivors and what are you going to present to them?
Thank you. Sure. I asked Don to talk about the progress that's been made on that aspect.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I mean, yes, one needs to keep in mind that as well as the prohibition side of the draft convention, there are a series of obligations that are positive obligations in terms of assisting victims, survivors, and also in the area, for example, of clearance. And there tends to be a focus on the prohibition, and I think we've seen that here just now. But one needs to bear in mind that this is also a commitment on the part of governments to assist people, and there are a lot of people who suffer from the use of cluster munitions and whose livelihoods are affected by cluster munitions. There's quite a detailed framework for that in the draft convention, and that will be an extremely important part of the outcome as soon as the convention comes into force.
Could I ask Ambassador if there's an issue to do with the status of the language going forward to Dublin? Because on the floor of the conference this morning, we heard a delegate from the Netherlands quoting George Orwell by saying that some of the proposals going forward to Dublin are more equal than others. Is there an issue here of the status of the language going forward to Dublin from this meeting?
Well, in the view of some delegations, there is an issue. Basically, what we have is a draft convention that has been considered at this meeting for the first time as a draft convention, but it reflects the work of two previous international conferences in Vienna and Lima, and a number of regional conferences and a number of other discussions that have taken place. So it's quite a refined document that has actually gone through a thorough process of consideration. On the other hand, we have, from this meeting, a number of proposals that individual states have presented to the meeting. Some states are of the view that those particular proposals that they've made should be considered as having the same status or on the same basis as a draft convention that has gone through the lengthy process that I've referred to. Now, I've been involved over the years in a lot of international negotiations. I've chaired a lot of international negotiations. You don't treat individual state proposals that have come out like that on the same basis as a document that has had thorough discussion. So, yes, there is a different view of the status of the different documents.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this country, ministers don't have exemption from speeding to get to airports. I'm able to take one more question. I would then suggest if you've got other questions that you need to have answered that you approach members of the panel individually at the end of the formal process.
What effect are you hoping this week's discussions will have on countries that have chosen not to engage in the process?
I think the effect that we're hoping for is to get a substantial majority of countries signed up to a treaty in Dublin so that those who have remained outside the process feel the same stigma about using cluster munitions that countries outside the Ottawa Convention feel about using landmines. I think that will have a huge effect on people that aren't part of the process and won't sign up to the treaty. They will still feel the weight of international opinion and humanitarian opinion and the weight of so many countries signing up to this treaty. Last question.
If they're going to matter to a superpower like the US, are they going to really give
it? I think that it will matter, and I think that it has had an impact in terms of landmines, and there is no country in this world, however big and powerful, that is exempt from the sense of overwhelming public opinion and country opinion in the international community. I'm now told that the number is up to 52 countries that have signed the Wellington Declaration. It grows by the minute. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. If you do have any other specific questions, I'm sure members of the panel up here will be able to deal with them individually. Thank you for attending.